Hi, this is Chris from PleasureMechanics.com. Welcome to the Speaking of Sex podcast. On today's episode, we have an interview with Jen Cross, author of Writing Ourselves Whole, Using the Power of Your Own Creativity to Recover and Heal from Sexual Trauma. This conversation is about how to use the tools of writing, storytelling, and even reading erotica as a tool to discover more about who you are as a sexual being, what desires in your life have remained unspoken, and how to find language around what you have experienced, but also what you want to experience. This conversation is for everyone, whether or not you are a survivor of trauma, whether or not you are a writer. We all have stories. We all have language and narrative that we use to talk about our sexuality and to imagine what is possible for us. And for a lot of us, those stories can get really limiting and confine us into a narrower and narrower identity and realm of possibilities. And as you know, here at Pleasure Mechanics, we are all about expansion, expanding possibilities, expanding our capacity for pleasure, expanding our idea of who we are as sexual beings and how sexuality influences our entire lives. And this book, Writing Ourselves Whole, was super meaningful for me to start engaging with. Even after 20 years of working with my own sexual trauma, I found tools within these pages that have been really useful and meaningful. And so I wanted to share this book with you. But here's what I did. We divided our conversation into two parts. So this part that you're going to hear is really for everyone, whether or not you're a writer, whether or not you're a survivor. There will be rich ideas for you in this conversation with Jen Cross. And then the second part of this conversation, we dedicated our time to focusing in on how writing can specifically be a powerful tool for survivors. That part of the conversation is part of something brand new here at Pleasure Mechanics. We are releasing today, as of this podcast, the Survivor's Toolkit. And here's the deal. My whole life has been influenced by sexual trauma, and why I became a sex educator is because of my sexual trauma. And my mission as a sex educator is all around focused on creating a healthier world for us all. And so all of the work we do at Pleasure Mechanics is about expanding into pleasure and recovering from the sexual violent culture we all live in. And for the past 10 years, I have wanted to put out a resource for survivors of sexual trauma, sharing what has worked for me, all I have learned in my 10 plus years of working hands-on with other survivors of trauma, and what I've learned from the broader trauma field that has made certain things around sexuality click into place. I've wanted to share these resources with you for a really long time, and Charlotte will tell you, I have woken up in the middle of the night, like hearing the voice of God in my ear, urging me to take on the topic of trauma a little bit more directly. And it has felt insurmountable. It has felt impossible to create a course for survivors of sexual trauma, because trauma affects us all differently. It is such a complicated and complex topic, and I wanted to do it justice. So I have just pushed it aside and kicked the can down the road a little bit. And finally, I'm at a place where I know it doesn't need to be perfect, and I know it doesn't need to be complete in order to be of service to people. And so what I'm creating is something new. We have our online mastery courses, and our courses are about things that we as Pleasure Mechanics can guide you through building specific skills about to give you successes and optimization in your sex life. Couples massage, erotic spanking, even kinky sex, I feel like I can give you very specific tools in a course-like format to give you mastery over these domains. So those are our online courses, and we are so proud of them. The toolkits, on the other hand, are going to be more freeform collections of resources for specific groups of people asking specific questions about sexuality. And the first one is the Survivor's Toolkit. So this is a collection of resources, interactive exercises, ideas, concepts, and frameworks that are accessible and available for anyone who identifies as a survivor or a partner of a survivor to help you start tackling this issue in your sex life. As a collection of resources, by nature, it is incomplete, it is never-ending, and these will be living documents that I will continue to gather resources in over time. So once you are part of the toolkit, you'll get all future updates automatically added to your collection. And some of these tools will be our own Pleasure Mechanics tools based on our expertise and experience, and some of the tools in the toolkits will be from other professionals and from adjacent fields like psychology and medicine and yoga and dance. And I will be collecting these resources for you over time. And so this is an experiment. I invite you to explore the toolkit if you or anyone you love has been affected by sexual trauma, and know that there are other toolkits in development. Let me know the tools that you need, what tools are missing from your erotic toolbox, and we will work on those for you. So part two of this interview with Jen Cross is in the Survivor's Toolkit. You can find the toolkit on our Teachable platform along with all of our other online courses, or go to pleasuremechanics.com/tools and you will find our growing collection of Pleasure Mechanics toolkits available for you. Okay, so here is part one of my conversation with Jen Cross, and you will find part two in the Pleasure Mechanics Survivor's Toolkit at pleasuremechanics.com/tools. Okay, here is my conversation with Jen. Cheers. So could you just get us started by introducing yourself and the work that you do?
Sure. My name is Jen Cross, and I am a writer and a writing workshop facilitator. I've been leading writing workshops with sexual trauma survivors and others since I got started in 2002. And I run an organization called Writing Ourselves Whole, which is focused on offering generative and manuscript workshops and groups for folks who are looking to have a space in which to create risky new writing, to dive into stories that they haven't before felt able or felt comfortable finding language for. And a lot of the work here, I talk about writing ourselves whole as being at the intersection of trauma and desire. And which doesn't mean that everybody I write with is a sexual trauma survivor. And yet I just don't think I've met anyone who isn't struggling with something really painful and also dealing with longings in their life. And there's so much rich and beautiful and powerful writing that comes out of that place.
Mm-hmm. And Writing Ourselves Whole is also the title of your book.
That's right.
Can you talk a little bit more about this concept? What is the wholeness that writing can bring us? And I'd also love for your reflections on, I'm curious, because I don't want people to tune out if they think, oh, I'm not a writer. I'm a carpenter.
Right.
Because we are both two writers and also survivors having this conversation. But I also know that we all have stories and we all have narratives. So what is the connection between the stories we all carry and the practice of writing and the sense of wholeness? Mm-hmm. If you can tackle all of that at once, that would be perfect. And we can break it down.
For sure. Well, that's a question I get a lot, this issue of I don't really know if I qualify as a writer, or I don't think I'm a writer, or I like to write, but I have been told by people in school that I am a bad writer. And so I'm nervous. Many folks have wounds around this form of expression, whether it came in school or whether it came at home. Or whether it just comes from this kind of larger societal mythology we have around what it means to be a capital W writer. And my teacher, Pat Schneider, who developed the workshop method that I use, which is called the Amherst Writers and Artists Workshop Method, she says that a writer is someone who writes. And at its baseline, right, that's what it means to be a writer, is sitting down with the notebook or with our fingers on the keyboards, moving words from our body out into the world. And folks do not have to identify or think of themselves as writers or someone who wants to publish or someone who wants to have this be their vocation to find use in journaling or free writing as an outlet and a form of expression and a way to not only learn what it is that we are thinking, but transform by diving into poetry or fiction or visioning, kind of imagining new ways of being in the world. Mm-hmm. So that's a piece that comes up really often. When I think about wholeness, all right, this idea of writing ourselves whole, what I don't necessarily think about all of the pieces coming together and like Humpty Dumpty sort of pasting everything back together again, and now we look like we did before. But more that the page can be a place where all of our pieces and all of ourselves are welcome, where we can be in conflict, where we can be messy, where we can be beautiful and desiring and innovative and scared and frightened and furious, all of these pieces that many of which we feel like we have to kind of put down in order to walk out in the world or show up at our job or go to a coffee date with a friend. We feel like I should only be this one particular part of myself because I don't want to frighten people or upset people, or I don't want to be too much. That's a piece that comes up really often. And I don't want to be shut down. So the page is a place where the wholeness of our complexity is welcome. And from that, then, I think we can discover the pieces of us that maybe we had to sit down or shove aside when we were, for those of us who are survivors, when we were surviving trauma. And we can find gratitude for the coping mechanisms that got us through. And we can also develop thoughts about new ways we want to be in the world when particular coping mechanisms stop working as well for us, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's less about fixing everything and bringing ourselves to sort of a singular solid identity or a singular solid voice. That piece comes up too, this idea of finding your voice in writing, whereas I think most of us have many voices and many ways that we want to express ourselves creatively. And to be able to have a place where all of that is welcome and not contradictory is powerful and useful.
Yeah. What have you found are some of the outcomes? Like, how does this process of taking on the practice of writing, and you do approach it as a practice, how can that transform our experience of ourselves as sexual beings?
I love this question. And I have all these answers that kind of rush up the train, kind of all wanting to get through the tunnel at the same time. I have found that, especially in, so if we start in a kind of erotic writing space, erotic writing workshop, what I have found is that for those of us who have been wounded in the sight of our sexuality, around our sexuality, writing can be a gentle and powerful and rather organic way to re-embody sexuality and desire, and to learn what it is that we're curious about and what it is that we might want when we're told often by sex educators, I think all of whom are intensely well-meaning, to be very clear about what it is that we want, mm-hmm. to say, to say yes when we mean yes, and to say no when we mean no. And we get to do that, that's our right, and that is absolutely true. And when we have had our sexuality or our desires sublimated to somebody else's, or when we have been told that our desires don't matter or trained into that understanding, or when we've had our desires used against us by perpetrators, that is not, it's not a straightforward thing to know what it is that I want, what it is that I find that we can question ourselves really constantly. Do I want this? Is this what I think they want? You know, and what I have in my own practice of recovery, writing about sex has been a way to investigate things that I'm curious about, or write out fantasy scenes, you know, that maybe are fine, you know, that I could bring it to my lover and she would be delighted, you know, she'd be like, right on, let's try that. But I don't know if I'm ready yet to try that. So the page is a way to sort of, to first of all, try on this particular idea. And in writing, I am having to embody this desire in a particular way, because I'm writing out, you know, this character's physical experience. And so I'm drawing on my own knowledge of my body in order to write those details out. And so in a sense, it's sort of gently kind of bringing that into my own skin. And then I'm also sort of visioning, this is what this could look like. You know, maybe, well, this is what it could look like if she didn't get triggered, or this is what it looked like if she got triggered and that was fine. And then we moved on from there. Yeah. So,
when I write erotica, I often find myself putting the words that I wish I could have said into my characters' mouths, or the moves I wish I could have made. And it's restorative. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Keep going.
That's it. Absolutely. I like that word, restorative. It offers some space for a different kind of possibility, I think. When I'm in the room, in the past, there have been many times where I felt, you know, shut down, or I'm grieving. I'm kind of can get stuck in those cycles of despair. This is never going to change. It's never going to get better. And on the page, I can shift that to something else, to something more. I can even imagine, you know, I think that I'm in a very different place now in terms of my erotic life than I was 20 years ago, or something more than that when I got started with this. Yeah. And I could not have imagined being at this place now back then. But I think that writing, among other practices, has really helped me to get there.
Wow.
The other thing, though, can I keep going with it?
Absolutely.
What I noticed in my erotic writing workshops is that folks would begin writing about sex, of course, because we're in a space where that's welcome. And there would be other kinds of desire that began to percolate up for folks. Oh, you know what? I think I really am not happy in this job that I'm in right now. And I would like to find a different kind of work. Or, you know what? I used to love to play the guitar, and I set it down, and I feel like I want to pick it up again. And those, like, I feel like when we have shut down our desires in any kind of way, there's not just one piece that we shut, that we close the door to, but quite a lot of our desire gets stuffed down. So when we open that door, there could be sort of an eruption of, oh, wait a minute, there are a lot of things I want to have different in my life right now. And that we can use the page then to continue exploring that and thinking about, okay, what are some other next steps I want to do? And we begin to there's the possibility of experiencing ourselves as empowered erotic beings, in that when I think about the erotic and the way that Audre Lorde does in her essay, The Uses of the erotic as power, which thinks about our erotic energy as being connected to our sexuality, of course, but is also bigger. I'm sort of making this large gesture with my arms right now that nobody can see. The sort of bigger and more all-encompassing than that.
That which gives that us our life, yes.
Yes, 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 right throughout all different parts of our lives.
Mm-hmm. 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 So one of the things, your book is amazing, first of all. When I
Thanks,
do interviews
Chris.
With people, I often, you know, I read their books and I engage with it. But this has kind of earned a place right on my bedside table. And Charlotte, my partner, said to me, you know, why haven't you done more of this practice yourself? You're a writer, you're a survivor. And I was like, well, I didn't have this book yet. I
right
needed
on.
This book as the guide. But in your book, you write, the process I describe that I've been working with for the past many years has three parts, each of which can crack us open to transformation: story, voice, and witness. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Yes. These are the three pieces I feel that we kind of move through in, particularly when we're writing in community with others. We are first finding language for, when I talk about story, I think about finding language for experiences that we maybe haven't ever put into words before, mm-hmm. or that we were explicitly told not to put into words, or that we have tried to language and have been shut down around or ignored or punished for.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's astonishingly risky even to write these things down in our notebooks when we're never going to show them to anybody else, because that that message, either directly or indirectly, is so strong. We can get it, you know, very explicitly from those who harm us. We can get it really explicitly from those close to us who do not want to hear what we're telling them. And we get it indirectly from our culture. Even in this particular, you know, quote unquote, like, moment that we're in right now, there's a particular kind of conversation that's being allowed in the moment around sexual violence. And yet there are still constant and pervasive messages that say, we don't want to hear this from you. Mm-hmm. You can't talk about this.
Or only if your story is the most convenient version. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Uh-huh. Or right. Fits into our understanding of, mm-hmm. of what it means to be a survivor. And only if you look like that, and only if you play this particular role.
Yeah.
So the piece about story is the piece about allowing ourselves to find language, and sometimes create language for mm-hmm. these experiences. And that might be poetic language, that might be metaphorical language. We get to think about and use all the narrative tools that are available to us, there can be a real freedom in not having to write the story linearly, that we can just drop into, we sit down at the page and we drop into whatever piece is up for us that day. That's the piece about story. And then the piece about voice is when we are in a room with others, in the particular method that I use, we write together and then I invite folks to read aloud what they've just written. So one incredibly important piece is that folks can choose not to read, and that there's no kind of forced confession in the room. No one ever has to share what it is that they've written. And it's always okay for us to trust our gut around that and know, okay, I feel like I want to share this, and also trust that voice that says, oh, I'd really like to keep this private. We get to do that. And if we do decide to read, then what we are doing is pulling these words off of the page, up into our bodies, and through our throats and through our mouths and out into the air. So we are speaking these things that were not meant to be spoken. Mm. And we're saying what was not meant to be said. And we're allowing others to hear what was not meant to be heard by anyone else. And that is, there's kind of just a incredible crackling in the air for me as a participant in the workshops almost every time that happens, that I never forget how important and powerful and risky that is to do. And that's the piece about voice, that we are saying these things that we were not supposed to say. And we're saying them in exactly the way that we want to say them. And no one is shutting us down. And no one, the page isn't shutting us down. And the people in the room aren't telling us, you're too much for me. I can't hear that story right now. And then the part about witness, then, again, in these workshop spaces, is that we get to, as participants, We get to bear witness to other stories. We get to hold these things that were meant to be isolated and silenced and shameful. And we get to have our stories held by others. And we also get to respond to one another really explicitly with what we heard and what was really powerful for us. And that's a pretty common workshop practice, right? We say, oh, I really loved the way that that metaphor flowed, or I love that particular image. In this space, when we are a group of survivors gathered, and this is true also in a space where folks don't identify necessarily as survivors, it's still powerful in a similar way. But in this space of kind of survivor writers, we, after we have shared our work, we get to hear back from others immediately. I heard you. I paid attention to you. I heard this story, and this is exactly what I heard you say. You know, so we know that that story isn't isolated in us anymore. We know it's being held and it's welcomed by others.
And I imagine there's often this sense of, I am not alone. This makes sense to other people, kind of that isolation and confusion that can often occur in a survivor's own thought process, sometimes when it's externalized and validated by others. That burden of confusion can be lifted. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say, can I say one thing
always,
about that?
Yes.
That piece about that sense of isolation, right? We it's broken or fractured when we share and our words are received, and also kind of in surprising ways when somebody else articulates something that we had not known we needed to say, or that we had thought no one else feels this way, and here someone else is reading a thing that's right about that. Or when, what was the last thing I wanted to say? I forget what it was. So that, yes, absolutely, that piece of breaking down that isolation that is such a deeply, it's so common to the human experience to feel alone. And knowing that intellectually does not help us. It makes no difference when I'm feeling lonely and like no one else in the world is going to understand what I'm going through. And so to have it happen in that organic fashion in the room can kind of get underneath that, those intellectual walls that we build up and kind of come in through the back door and start to break that down.
And what role does reading erotica and sexual narratives have for you in this process?
Reading erotica was transformative for me. I think what I want to say is that I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience of violence.
Okay.
And what I want to say is that my stepfather, who was my perpetrator, used pornography in a way that was violent. Uh-huh. And so I was trained into, as I think many of us are in this culture, a particular idea of what it means to be sexual, what it means to be a sexual woman, and what a woman's power looks like in sexuality. Mm-hmm. And when I was a sophomore in college, I think one of my very best friends in the world gave me a copy of Pat Califia's Macho Sluts.
Uh-huh.
And that blew my world open.
Yeah.
And this is a collection of lesbian erotica that tangles with BDSM. It tangles with all different kinds of power dynamics and relationship and intensely powerful and empowered women in their sex and their sexuality, whether they're tops, whether they're bottoms, whether they're femmes, whether they're butches. It just was revolutionary for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really the first time I became aware that women could occupy many different roles in their sexuality. Mm-hmm. And that each individual woman could have we just didn't have to be one thing or occupy one position. And the other thing that happened this was reading Pat Califia as well as Dorothy Allison and her essays and stories. What I found is that there were queer women writers, this is in the 90s, who were doing really interesting social commentary through erotica. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that is a thing I want to be able to do. You know, they're investigating kind of cultural dynamics. They're investigating relationship models. Dorothy Allison is talking about cooking and food and her porn. Like, it was just so beautiful. And suddenly there was all this possibility. I was talking about this with somebody recently, that folks who write humor talk about the ways that when somebody's laughing, they're more open to learning or hearing a difficult message. Mm-hmm. And I think the same can be true when we're talking about erotica. Mm-hmm. You know, folks are open, they're engaged and permeable in this kind of physical and also psychic way, in a sense. And that's a place from which to grow and open to new ideas. And so that has been really foundational for me in my work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd love to compare copies of Macho Sluts and see where our dog ears overlap.
Exactly. It was Jesse. That story.
Was it the surprise party or the birthday party?
Woof. No, it was Jesse. I know. And then the surprise party. Yeah, that came later.
So this is all beautiful. At the back of your book, you have amazing questions, prompts for people to write. And one of the things we often do with Pleasure Mechanics is we give people worksheets, fill in the blanks, conversation starters, because I feel like so often all we need is a good framing question to allow ourselves to even reflect on sexuality long enough to think about, I mean, these basic questions: what do I desire? What do I want? What kind of power would I like to play with? All of these questions that kind of create this foundation for our sexual identity, we are not asked very often in our life and in our culture. And so this process of, even if you never write a single word down, just thinking with language and narrative frameworks can be so revolutionary. I mean, permission for who we want to be. So I think the book is worth getting just to look at, even if you never want to write anything, look at the questions and then start in the beginning and inspire ourselves as writers. I think writing and dance and cooking, there are these areas that we just say, I'm a good dancer, I'm not a good dancer, I'm a writer, I'm not a writer. But movement and language is for all of us. So I really invite our listeners to give themselves the gift of this tool, even if it feels out of their comfort level. And I'm so grateful that you put this book out there as a guide into this practice that can be so transformative. So thank you. Amazing job. And where can people find you to learn more about your online workshops and what you offer?
My website is writingourselveswhole.org, and my email is jennifer@writingourselveswhole.org. I love connecting with folks. And then on the website, then there's information about the workshops that are coming up, both online. My next online group starts in May. Folks are interested. And then there's the blog that's there, and I love to connect with folks through that. And folks can learn more about the book and other pieces of the work.
Beautiful. And we will link that all up at pleasuremechanics.com on the show notes page for this episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to talk with you. I'm so grateful.
Okay, so I hope you enjoyed that and that you're inspired to pick up a book and read some erotica, pick up a pen and start writing. You will find some of Jen's writing prompts and an excerpt from her book on the show notes page for this podcast episode over at pleasuremechanics.com. So that will give you a good place to start exploring this practice. And if nothing else, I invite you to start reflecting on the stories you tell yourself about your own sexuality and your own sexual possibilities, and how can those stories be more expansive and permission-giving for you. And remember, part two is in our Survivor's Toolkit, our brand new resource for anyone whose life has been affected by sexual trauma. It is a free online resource. It is a growing resource library. I will be adding things to it all the time, but there is so much there for you already waiting to offer you tools and resources and strategies to work with your sexual trauma, recover the possibility of more pleasure, and create a sexuality on your own terms, which is what we want for all of you. We are the Pleasure Mechanics. We will be back with you next week with a brand new episode of Speaking of Sex. If you appreciate what we are doing in the world and want to support us and help us keep going in these troubled times, we would love your support on Patreon, where you can make a monthly donation to support our work and keep this podcast going. You'll find that at patreon.com/pleasuremechanics. patreon.com/pleasuremechanics. Make a donation of $1 a month, $5 a month. For $25 a month, we are going to be shipping out pleasure packages to all of our patrons at the $25 level. We are so excited to be engaging with you all there. We really appreciate you supporting our work. It is what keeps us going as we do this risky and vulnerable work in the world. Thank you for your support. We will be back with you next week. I am Chris from PleasureMechanics.com, wishing you a lifetime of pleasure. Cheers.